There are a group of dynamic young Africans spending part of their summer at Clark Atlanta University as part of a federal fellowship program. Kiplin Primus with the local take has more this morning. Good morning, Kiplin.
Good morning, Rob, and good morning, good people. We are joined once again by the Yali Fellows. This is a very dynamic group of young professionals and entrepreneurs from the continent of Africa. Over 50,000 people apply to be Yali Fellows, and only 500 people are accepted. And we're joined this morning with four of the young folks out of the continent of Africa who are here to study this morning. And first, I'm joined by Munya from Zimbabwe.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Munya. And Munya, you were explaining to me that you are in media.
Yeah.
And you work on a streaming company.
Platform, yeah.
Video by demand. Could you tell us, our listeners, what that entails and what you do?
Okay, I run a video on demand service called TV Yangu. We stream African content or any African content with, which focuses on Africa. So we put it online on our website and people come and watch it for free. Right now, you can watch it. You can go on our website and just watch it for free, but we're working on adding more content so that you can subscribe to it.
So a subscription service. And I think some of our listeners might be a little bit surprised when we hear about technology in Africa. So explain, is this part of you are a tech startup?
Yep.
Is there a tech startup community in Zimbabwe, and how do you fit in there?
Okay, yeah, there's a strong tech startup community in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe actually has very fast internet, surprisingly. We have one of the fastest internet on the continent, and we are privileged to have one of the biggest internet networks on the continent. So actually, Harare is probably close to being the most connected city on the continent. So that is a huge advantage, and we are actually experiencing a startup boom, a dot-com boom. So you have a lot of tech companies starting up. So as a TV producer, I thought, well, let me jump into this game while it's still fresh, and start my own tech company. So I'm a TV producer, so I stuck to my knitting, and I had a lot of friends who had movies, who had made movies and put stuff on YouTube. So everyone had a YouTube channel, but being on YouTube, you kind of have a lot of content going up every day. So you have like hundreds of videos going up, and having a Zimbabwean video getting to see a Zimbabwean video is pretty hard. So you have a lot of international stuff coming your way. So finding that video that's close to home is very difficult. So I thought, why don't I start finding those videos and putting them on one platform so people in Zimbabwe can see their own content.
Yeah. So you curate the content, and then you make it available for your audience to partake, and they can find it better, because if they're looking specifically for the content out of Africa, they know to go to your site and they can pull.
Yes, we started off as just curating the content, and then people started giving us the content, and then we started licensing content. We even licensed content from MTV, when they produce something that's specific to Africa, so we get that as well. And then we started making our own contents, our own original web series, and then partnering with studios to make shows. So we run it like a proper television channel.
It sounds like one of our, like Netflix and Hulu here in the U.S.
Exactly, Netflix and Hulu. So we've modeled our business around that, and we're kind of filling it out because it's still pretty new. We started in 2013. So we're kind of creating stuff as we go, making things up as we go as well.
That's the way to do it, Munya. So now explain to our listeners again, you've got this tech boom going on in Zimbabwe. Tell our listeners something else about Zimbabwe that we probably would not know about just listening to national or international news.
Well, Zimbabwe has one of the highest literacy rates in the world. It's actually number two in Africa. We have like a 96 or 98% literacy rate. Zimbabwe receives more sunshine than any country on earth. Zimbabwe has more gold per square kilometer than any country on earth. Zimbabwe has more mineral diversity than any country on earth. So if you're looking to invest, come to Zimbabwe.
And you know, Munia, I was going to say, what is it that you want to learn here? And it seems like you've got a lot to teach us.
Well, I'm here to really connect with the people of Atlanta and really make connections and find areas of collaboration. So we're really looking to just create relationships while we're here. So that's why I'm here.
I think it's marvelous, and I love talking with the Yali Fellows because we always find out something new about the continent of Africa that didn't filter through.
Yeah.
And Munya, I'm going to switch you out, and we're going to come back with Funme from Nigeria. Good people, we are back in the studio and we are talking with Funme from Nigeria, who also has an interest in media and broadcasting. Welcome, Funme.
Hello, people. I love to be here. My name is Funme Ilori from Nigeria.
And now, Funme, explain to our listeners what you do in Nigeria.
Okay. I run the foremost mobile library on wheels for children in Nigeria. And it's just so amazing because the literacy level for children as compared to Munye is quite low. There's a lot of innovation. However, there's still a lot of gap between some children and then some children. And then I'm trying to also bridge that gap by creating the mobile library. It's been in existence in many developed countries, but not in the developing ones. So that helps me to get the books across to the children as against them going to the libraries. Many times the children have access to library. However, there is no motivation to read because the way we study, you get the learning and just skip it and download it. You know, there is no extra research. But using the library, you get a lot of information. Your knowledge base is wider. And I think that investing that in the children is a way to go because these children, in a very short time, they're the leaders.
Like you are the leader now.
Yes.
And I know a lot of Nigerians have immigrated to the U.S. and we've got a lot of stars that we see and interact with all the time in Nigeria.
Okay.
So we kind of feel kinship with a lot of folks from Nigeria. Okay. But tell us something, Funme, about your country that we might not know.
Well, my country is a really beautiful one. The political state now is something that we're really looking up to. We have a new president and we have a lot of good promises. A lot of changes are happening. Before now, the corruption rate was high. But we're looking forward to a really, really low, you know, I know that it can be eradicated just once, but Nigerians are really trusting that the new government is going to make a lot of changes. It's called the Government for Change.
And we all trust in our government and we all have high hopes for
yes.
them. One of the things I know about the Yali Fellows is that it brings young business professionals from across the continent to the U.S., but it also brings you all in contact with each other that you would not have naturally had. Tell us what those relationships are like. And I know you've just started, but you guys have been together for a couple of days now. What is that like, meeting and interacting with young entrepreneurs from across your continent?
It's the word is amazing because in Clark Atlanta University, we have 25 young African entrepreneurs and from different sectors. Just so beautiful. We have people from the media, we have people in education, we have people in technology, we have people in agriculture, different things, you know. Like when I talk to people, they're like, mobile library, we've not heard that. And somebody's doing mailing, somebody's in radio, you know, like Munye, someone is in design and fashion, and there's just so many things to learn from. We've spent just 6 days in Atlanta, but it's looking like we've spent 6 months because we're getting to know each other. And somehow when we get to introduce ourselves to all the people we've met, we keep wowing, like, wow, so you mean, even though we're hearing it again, but we're just like, wow, these are all the people I'm privileged to meet. It's a great opportunity.
I think it's a great opportunity not only for you all to interact with the diaspora, the folks who are here, but you also get to interact with the folks who are home.
Yes, yes. It's a really good, amazing opportunity, and we're tapping into it. My dream is to build the largest library in Africa, and imagine I just have all of the people that are going to help me do that with me.
That is an amazing thing. Yes. Now, tell us a little bit about the process. There are 50,000 people across the continent that apply, and only 500 are accepted. So how did you get involved? How did you know about it? What did you do?
All right. For me, I have a coach back home that told me about the YALI. He just said, for me, you're doing amazing things, and I think you would fit into this program. I didn't know about it, but I Googled. There was an application we were supposed to sign up to, and we did a lot of that. It was tasking. But I was able to pull through. I had a lot of people help me look through it too. And after the submission, even though I believed I was going to make it, when the day came and my name was listed, it was like, oh, Fumi, you made it. And, you know, I was also imagining that, but you were telling yourself you were going to make it. So why are you so surprised? But, you know, the number of people that applied would have just really put you off balance. And thereafter, we got invited to our different embassies, and we had oral interviews. Some people even had, like, projects to write right there, you know. It was on the spot. And they wanted to know for real if you were doing what you said you were doing. And thereafter, they had to still cut the numbers of people up till 500. I'm really glad I made it.
And so now, what do you hope to take back? You've talked about all of the folks that you're meeting and this library that you want to build. What do you hope to get out of this experience?
Already I'm getting it, and that is learning. Because for me, what drives me is passion. I'm just so passionate about the children, so passionate about education, and not so passionate about business, because I'm not making a lot of money. But I'm wondering that, okay, now that I'm here, I'm going to learn about business and entrepreneurship, how to do it right, and also how to make money from whatever it is that your passion is. I'm going to be going back home with a lot of good stuff, and there's going to be a revolution in all the things that I'm doing.
I think we're living in a wonderful time, because I follow a lot of the YALI fellows from last year. I'm going to follow you guys this year on Twitter. And for the first time, Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora can communicate with no filter.
Yep.
So we can learn from each other and trade information with each other.
Yes, and very important.
Continue to watch the rising of the African continent.
Yes, we appreciate that all the people at Atlanta have been so good to us. In fact, it just seems like they've been telling one another, be nice, be nice, be nice, because we find that culture in everyone that we have met with. It's a really good thing that we were posted to this place.
You're talking about Southern hospitality.
Yeah, yeah, really nice one.
Well, Funmi from Nigeria, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be right back with Napoleon from Zimbabwe. Good people, we are joined now by Napoleon from Zimbabwe. And Napoleon, this is comfortable for you because you were saying that you do the morning show in Zimbabwe on Star FM?
Absolutely. I'm a radio host and a TV host as well.
And so tell us about your coming to the YALI Fellows. How was it positioned to you? What made you think this was something that was going to be good for you to do?
Well, I got the opportunity because off radio to interview last year's fellows. So they came back from the United States, back to Zimbabwe. They were so excited. I got to interview a few of them. And while we were in that interview, I realized, you know what? This is a fantastic program. This is something that would definitely impact our countries in Africa, just simply because of skills transfer. You know, if people come here, they learn from some of the big industrialized
corporates,
you know, like your CNNs, your Coca-Colas, and all these companies that are, you know, big in the world, and they started from the USA. So after interviewing them, you know, I was like, you know, I think I need to be part of this. So I then asked them, obviously, off air afterwards, guys, I need to also, you know, apply. What do I do? And went through the rigorous process that Fumi was talking about of writing essays and answering all these questions. And then afterwards, go for an interview and you get grilled in the interview and answer all these questions and then wait for like a month and a half to be told, you know, what the verdict is. And I'm glad I managed to go through.
I am glad that you are here as well. Explain to our listeners in Zimbabwe, a lot of us hear stories that may not be true. And we just heard from Munya, who's giving us these wonderful things about what's going on in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
But explain to our listeners what, if any, restrictions are put on media in your country.
We've got media laws like any other country, you know, in terms of ethics, media ethics. You can't, you know, give a story that is not corroborated. You have to, you know, like any journalist. So we've got a lot of media ethics in terms of the laws. But really, it's pretty much the same as any other country. You know, there's freedom of speech. You've got the right to an opinion, and you can say what you feel, you know, as an opinion. But we don't necessarily then take that as fact until it has been proven. That's pretty much how we operate.
I think that it's wonderful sharing this information, because a lot of times, even as journalists, you hear things and you see things and you wonder, okay, now is this true?
Exactly.
How does this fit? How do I fit? What can I do about it?
Yeah.
And so you're talking about your journalism, and it's the same.
It's pretty much the same. And you know what? Nowadays, it's even more, there's a higher need for checking up and following up on facts and, you know, making sure that everything is proven because of social media. Social media, there are a lot of, you know, people that make a lot of claims that might not be true. And just to either incite or just cause excitement, put out some of these stories, and then if you go ahead and run with it and say, this is what has happened in the nation, and then you find out the next day that it is not true, then that you could get even arrested for, because it's you've peddled lies, basically.
And you've misled the public.
Misled the public, exactly.
So, Napoleon, tell me about some of the stories that you have done, and don't have to be groundbreaking, but just some of the stories that you've done that your listeners engage with on your show.
On my current show, which is The Breakfast Show, it's a very diverse show. We've got a lot of current affairs. We talk about what is happening around the world, news from everywhere else, and then we also talk about, you know, the weather. We talk about things that people can listen to as they're going to work. So on that one, it's very day by day. Whatever is happening on that day is what we focus on. But before that, I used to host talk shows on a show called The Hub, which is our evening talk block. And I've hosted some pretty prominent people in Zimbabwe, prominent business people, prominent politicians as well, talking about policies. I hosted the president's spokesperson. His name is Honorable George Charamba. And that was a pretty hot show at the time, because there were a lot of controversial things happening. And because he was part of the Ministry of Information, and there was a big saga that had happened. We called it the Salary Gate, where we had a lot of CEOs that were earning a lot of money that was not justified. And one of the CEOs fell under his ministry. So that was a bit pretty explosive one. I've also interviewed the American ambassador to Zimbabwe, Ambassador George Wharton. He's still stationed in Zimbabwe right now. I interviewed him last year, and that was also quite a big interview for me, because a lot of people learned things about America that they didn't know, you know, because we always get stuff from the media as well. And to know how the people are, how the people behave, you know, why there's a craze for American football, and you know, out there we call football soccer. I mean, soccer is what we call football. And we think, why do Americans have to call it football and they don't kick the ball? You know, all those things. People managed to ask that, and it was quite cool.
I think that is great. And so now, as a media person, we are on the airways, and you do get to flavor the story, so to speak. You get to tell the story. You get to tell the direction it goes in. You get to tell, you know, how much listeners actually get out of the story.
Yeah.
How do you edit that? What is your process like to make sure that you're getting that truth so that you're not arrested for misleading?
Well, besides the basic, journalistic processes of get the story, make sure it's
true.
It make sure it makes sense really in telling it, and then call up the people that are involved in the story, just to make sure that this actually really happened. Excuse me, sir, did you actually beat up your wife or whatever it is that would have happened? And say, okay, so this is really what happened. And then you still have to find an ethical angle to tackle it. Because you need to make sure that within the story you're not infringing on human rights. You're not infringing on rights of children, because you might have a story of a child who may have been molested or may have been sexually abused. But there are laws that say you cannot just mention the name of a child. So if you don't know that, getting on there, you don't know some of those journalistic principles, you might go ahead and say, but I was telling the truth. Yes, it is true, but you've infringed on the rights of the child. Because you're not supposed to mention the child's name without consent of their parents, things like that. So we go through that kind of a process beforehand just to check everything, make sure everything, all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed before we then bring the story on air and talk about it. And usually we would love to get someone who was involved in the story to actually help us tell it. So we'll bring someone to interview.
So, Napoleon, in journalism and journalistic and media, a lot of, in the U.S., a lot of media outlets do come under fire for using a slant on the news or just a slant on the news. How do you go about making sure that your content is good content and that you're feeding your listeners the news that they can use or the information that they can actually use?
We get a lot of feedback from our listeners, because of the 21st century, there's a lot of, tools that you can use even while you're live on radio to figure out what the people are saying. Back in the day, they'd have had to write a letter and it might take a week or 2 weeks to get to the, radio station. Now people can just go on Twitter or on Facebook or on WhatsApp or on whatever social media platform and tell you immediately what they think about what's going on. So through that feedback, we're able to know what people need or what kind of news people are interested in. That pretty much informs a lot of our editorial policy and a lot of how we then bring out the stories. We really try and do it based on the needs of the people, because really we're a commercial radio station as well. So we're trying to get the listenership. That's the end game. We really want to get the listenership so we can get the advertising. So on Star FM, it's all about the people, talking about that, Star FM actually celebrated its third anniversary a few days ago. And the theme, which had been running throughout the month, is Radio to the People. And we're going out to different locations and broadcasting from there. What we're trying to do really is to get to know what people want, what news people want, what kind of content they want, and we fashion it. We fashion our programming based on the feedback we get from our research.
What do you hope to take away from being a Yali Fellow in Atlanta this year?
A lot. Definitely being in the media, I would like to see a lot of the systems that have been in place for decades, really. Like I said, we only celebrated our third anniversary, which is 3 years. We're very, very young. You're telling us that this particular radio station
41 years.
Has been there for 41 years. Already there's a lot for me to learn just from that. So I'm looking to learn a lot from the established radio stations and TV stations, because I'm also a TV personality and a TV producer. I'm looking to, you know, go to places like CNN, like I mentioned earlier on, see how they do their shows, what goes into their productions, what kind of a team works behind maybe someone like Aman Poor, you know, when she does her shows, what kind of machinery is behind her to be able to do something like that. I'm also a farmer, so I'm into fish farming. I farm tilapia back in Zimbabwe, and I'm also looking to learn from that as well, get the contacts, get to network, and get to understand the systems.
And Napoleon, I mentioned that people listen to our radio station around the world, and are you guys streaming?
Yes, we also stream live. It's www.starfm.co.zw. Star FM as in star.
Starfm.co.zw
or ZW. I guess I'm in the USA. I need to say ZW.
ZW. Thank you, Napoleon. Thanks so much for your time. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk with Selly from Senegal. We are now joined by Selly from Senegal, and this is one of those moments when radio is lacking, because she's a fashion designer, and you can tell the minute you look at her, she is in fashion at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. So Selly, thank you so much for coming and talking with us.
Thank you.
Tell us about your business, about your fashion design and what you do.
Yes, I am a fashion designer in Dakar, Senegal, and I am a president of an association of artists in Senegal named Les Petites Pierres, which aims the renewal of the art scene in Senegal. And
So is there a rebirth of arts in Senegal?
There is something really electric going on in Dakar, mainly because I live in Dakar, so I observe the scene a lot. I think there is a kind of alternative movement that is rising, and it's we, as creative profiles in the city, we all know what is going on, and we want to make it visible.
In the U.S., we talk about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have changed it to STEAM because they talk about the arts, that the arts should be a part of it, because the arts bring so much to a culture and to a people. Can you explain how arts, that arts movement, fits in Senegal?
Well, it's, I can give you an example to tell you how much the arts are important. I went in February at Design Indaba in South Africa. I had the chance to do the conference, so I talked to a lot of people, around 4,000, and I told them my story. I told them why I was doing what I was doing, why I was creating things, why what I was doing was particular in my environment. And you just realize that you touch people in places, you know, math cannot touch them. News maybe cannot touch them. You know, it's something very specific that you touch. And after my speech, everybody was, a lot of people was interesting into Dakar. They never heard of the city, but now they wanted to know more. Now they wanted to come. Now they were interested into the Biennale of Arts. So I think it's really important.
And why fashion? How does fashion design speak to you? How do you use fashion to be creative?
Yes, it's interesting what you're saying, because fashion, for me, it's a medium among many other media that I'm really interested into creating things into arts. I adore music. It's in my creative process. I need music to be able to create a collection. I love cinema. I love the film industry. I think later I will develop that. And why fashion? I guess I was interested in fashion for a while. And in around 2011, I decided to focus on it then too.
And you were saying that you design women's fashions mainly, but also for men.
Yes, I designed for men. I started with women, and the demand appears, you know, so I decided to do it.
So when they said, we want some of those wonderful things.
They said, we want some things. How come you don't do anything for us? Yeah, so I did it.
So tell me about fashion design. Are you a selling in retail outlets? Do you sell one-on-one to your customers? How do you do that? How does your design go from the drawing board, so to speak, yes, to someone's home?
Yes, I design the clothes. I have two ateliers. I have a prototype atelier, and I have an atelier which is responsible of the intemporal line. These are pieces we do in the summer, winter. We do those pieces all the time. So I am opening a shop in September in Dakar. So that would be my the way to distribute my things.
And when you were accepted to the Yali Fellows and you were coming to the U.S., what do you hope to gain out of this experience?
Well, I observe a lot. I observe a lot. I'm very curious of the organizations, of all the business corporation we have met. So I open my eyes, I open my ears, and I'm curious to know how things work and what leads you to success in a business level.
And Africa is a huge continent. A lot of people don't realize that. And we're talking now with people from three different countries, Nigeria, Senegal, yes, and Zimbabwe, which are not close to each other at all. So what is that like for you to be able to interact with your peers or your cohorts across the continent?
Yeah, it's electricity, you know. It's I met Munya, who is creative. I met Napoleon. There are many people, many creative people in the team as well. And just being in contact with all these countries, you just tell to yourself, well, today if I want to go to Nigeria, I know I can call Fumi. She's my Yali mate now. If I want to go to Zimbabwe, I can go. You learn more. And I love discovering the art scenes in the countries I hear of. So it's important for me to know that here I have people. If I want to come, I can go. It's great. It opens a lot of opportunities.
A lot of opportunities. And I think it opens your mind to what other people are doing in other countries.
Definitely. Yes, it does.
And now what do you hope to bring back? So you're opening your store in a couple of months.
Yes.
When you return, what do you hope to bring back?
Well, more organization. As I told you earlier, there is a strong alternative scene that is rising. So I want those people to have a specific platform to communicate with their targets and to have that business orientation that lacks us as creative person sometimes. So basically, this is what I want to take back there, to observe the models, to observe the businesses, and adapt it to a creative context.
And Senegal, our listeners, I know we're familiar with Senegal, but tell us a little bit about your country, things that we probably wouldn't know.
Senegal is people are crazy about fashion, and there is a shift that is happening because they tend to buy more and more from local designers. Actually, the suit, men's suit, people do not wear European or Western suits anymore. They wear Senegalese designer suits to go to work. So it's kind of interesting to observe the streets of Dakar in the 1970s and the streets of Dakar today. It's totally different.
So the European influence is waning and the African influence is rising?
Yeah, it is. In an organic way. So it's interesting to see that the shift is coming from a need, and it's coming from the truth. That's something that you want to do, but it's just happening.
That organic growth is always better.
Yeah.
I want to thank our Yali Fellows for being with us this morning. They are in the studio live, and that's a wonderful thing. We've spoken with Funme from Nigeria, with Selle from Senegal, Munya from Zimbabwe, and Napoleon from Zimbabwe. And we want to wish the Yali Fellows a wonderful summer here at Clark Atlanta University. Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.